off the leash. Come outside, you won't be what you see. We got everything you need for your new station. Take it from me with no manipulation. Sign up, no boy, download, enjoy. It's easy as say, we're coming up real quick. All you need is a will to break away from the back. Just sit like my friend and you know you're gonna
join us now and when. Share the software. You'll be free, hackers. You'll be free. Join us now and when. Share the software. You'll be free, hackers. You'll be free.
American media is a business, and it has a mission, not to inform Americans, but to entertain them.
You know, there's happy news for happy people with happy problems.
And the business leaders said that they had to renew with vigor what they called the everlasting battle for the minds of men, and indoctrinate citizens with the capitalist story.
Global corporations feeding us the news as they see fit.
Truth is subversive. It's anti-American.
Americans have computers in school, dozens of TV stations, and the most aggressive news media on Earth. Does that mean they're better informed? Hardly.
And now, for Newsreel, here's Sean Kennedy.
And it is a good day. This is Sean Kennedy reporting to you from the Internet for Thursday, September 8th, 2005. This would be Newsreel, the WOG Global sit rep for core political tyranny, technology, and trends for your headspace and timing. Rant Media is taking a stand for free speech today, and just by listening, you are too. You can read all the news stories along with me by going to my live journal. You can get to my live journal currently by going to sean_kennedy.livejournal.com. This would be a free radio broadcast that can be heard on Rant Radio, Wild Bunch Radio, WNY Media Network, KJAG Radio, Pure Rock Radio, OspreyRadio.info, Extreme Radio Tampa, and SRN1. And you yourself are free to distribute this broadcast any way that you see fit. You can give it away to people. You can hand it out. Do whatever you please. It's totally fine. You can rebroadcast. Do this on FM. And make sure you talk to other people about Newsreel so that they can hear all the news that everybody else says you shouldn't. Let's get straight into some feedback right off the top. Dear Sean, I was listening to your broadcast on Monday about bisexuality. Uh-oh, here it comes. I can only speak for myself, since all people, regardless of their sexual orientation, have different perceptions of their sexuality. Now, this is true. Sexuality is a weird thing. As a bisexual female, I choose based on their personalities rather than their genitals. There is no rolling dice to determine whether I'm straight or gay on any given day. It may be difficult, but try to think of it along the same lines as I like black people and white people. I like poor people and rich people. That's an interesting kind of viewpoint, I suppose, because there are people, not categories. Perhaps bisexuals, like myself, view people as people and don't identify them by their sex. A philosophy during an Enlightened period stated, l'âme n'est pas de sexe, or the soul has no sex. Which is interesting. This was fought by Cy Hereth. I think is how you say that name. There's a lot of, you know, can I buy a vowel here? But anyway, so this is what we're, the bisexuality thing. I don't know much about it. I'm kind of a straight guy, so, I don't really know how to deal with it. All I can do is look at it from a straight guy perspective. And, you know, sometimes it's hard. Sometimes it's hard to be supportive of all this kind of stuff. You know, you sit there and you're like, oh, wow, yee, gah, because that actually causes a physical revulsion in me. It's not my fault. It's just that when I see that, you know, I'm joking around and everything. It's just when you're really, you know, thrown up in your face like that. Like, here's some gay porn. I'm just like, whoa, can't really deal with that well. Go party with, you know, drag queens, gay people, all the good stuff. Gay guys kissing starts to get a little weird on me. I actually start to have a physical revulsion feeling to it. I'm sorry. Not my fault. You know, I don't want to push it on nobody. It's not like I hate people. I can't help it if I start feeling sick. You know, but anyway, you know, that's an interesting point, though, about how bisexual people, you know, kind of view reality based on the individual. It's a touchy subject, man. It's a touchy subject. It's right up there with racism when you start talking about it. Dear Sean. Hey, Sean. You know that homosexual cowboy movie? Oh, no. You were talking about on Monday's show? Well, I had an experience very much like that not too long ago. I rented this movie. It was based on my general location, Portland, Oregon, called Graffiti Artist. It was more or less about these two skater kids who are graffiti artists. They run around between Portland, Oregon and Seattle, Washington, skating and making art. Well, halfway through the movie, these hardcore skater kids come out of left field and all of a sudden one guy is jerking the other one off. I just about shit. It was so unexpected. I just about had a coronary. Now, it's most definitely not that I have anything against gays, as one of my male roommates happens to be gay. However, our responses were very much the same. What the fuck? Unexplainable and somewhat disturbing, Levite. Well, you know, I don't know about that. I think that there's a real, like, you might be want to be careful here, because when you start, you know, being straight, there's nothing wrong with being straight. You know what I mean? And if people go, well, you never get a gay guy saying, well, I have no problem with straight people. Some of my friends are straight. You know what I mean? It's like that whole racism thing where every time you say, well, I don't have a problem with black people. I've got friends who are black. And this guy here, when he's calling me up, he's like, one of my roommates is gay. I'm not a bigot. It's like we're all terrified of being called a bigot, which, I mean, I guess there's a reason to be afraid of that, I suppose. I'm not a bigot myself. Well, culturally, I have some problems with some cultures in the world, but generally, I don't like to think of myself as too much of a bigot. I'm okay as long as gay people can have a plan to get to space and stuff like that, and they don't interfere with space planning. I would sooner have everybody gay than everybody following some weird mud hut religion. You know, that might have problems for population, but still, you know, you get where I'm going with this. Dear Sean, I tried to keep the last one short, meaning email, but I know some good info about tritium. First off, tritium is just a proton, hydrogen atom, with two neutrons stuck to it. Notice under section 2 that, this is according to a link you sent me, that tritium is the least toxic of all radioactive nuclides. Section 3 states that the radiation is so low, it does not even require external shielding, as in a watch. In section 1, it states that the half-life of the body is 10 to 12 days. As well, this can be cut in half by drinking plenty of fluids. If you are exposed to tritium and will equilibrate throughout the field compartments of the body and deliver the dose, a very small dose now sprout out even more to the whole body. It also states that the beta particles, some of the most damaging pieces of radiation, don't even penetrate dead skin. I, for one, almost have my BS in chemistry, and if that is worth anything, I'm not worried at all about the tiny vials of tritium that are in my very sturdy wristwatch. Hope this helps, flesh-eating virus. Well, that's very cool. That's very cool. So it seems that the tritium in the watches, so far from the data, and I've received some other data from some other sources, and they're saying that, you know what, the tritium, Sean, not such a big deal. Wouldn't worry about it too incredibly much. Sounds okay with me. Now, in bionics news, we got some straight into some news. No more feedback. Never mind that. Let's get into the robotic parts. Scientists have developed a new ultralight limb that can mimic the movements of a real hand better than any currently available. So, we're talking about cybernetic attachments, or would that be bionic? You become a cybernetic organism with bionic attachments. The research was presented today at the Institute of Physics in a conference, Sensors and Their Applications 13, which took place at the University of Greenwich, Kent, in the United Kingdom. Every year, 200 people in the UK lose their hands. Wow, that's a shitty stat, eh? Common cases include motorbike accidents and industrial accidents, as well as too much masturbation. Okay, I was making up the masturbation one. Currently available prosthetic hands are either simple mimics that look like a hand but don't move, or moving hands which have simple single motor grip. You know, that kind of a thing. The human hand has about 27 bones and can make a huge number of complex movements and actions. Dr. Paul Chappell, a medical physicist from the University of Southampton, has designed a prototype hand that uses 6 sets of motors and gears so that each of the 5 fingers can move independently. It enables it to make movements and grip objects the same way a real human hand does, but probably not nearly as effectively. But nevertheless, it is a step forward. The new hand, called the Southampton Remedy Hand, can now be connected to muscle in the arm via a small processing unit and controlled by small contractors to the muscles, which move the wrist. So we're talking about, you know, this is very, very much, you know, beta, Return of the Empire Strikes Back, kind of Return of the Jedi sort of stuff for Luke's hand there. Dr. Chappell said, with this hand, you can clutch objects such as a ball. You can move the thumb out to one side and grip objects with the index finger the way you would when you open a lock or a key. Or you can wrap your fingers around an object with what we call the power grip, like we use when you hold a hammer or a microphone. I personally don't power grip my microphone, but that's just me. Very, very cool, and it'd be nice to see as this technology develops even further. Slowly but surely, we will be replacing our bodies with machines. Now, in FEMA news, FEMA, of course, you know, being the federal emergency, you know, whatever agency that's completely dropped the ball in New Orleans, a federal official in charge of the bungled New Orleans rescue was fired. This is the guy who's currently in charge of FEMA. Well, he was fired from his last private sector job overseeing horse shows. Now, I'm not too sure what horse shows and FEMA have in common or how he got the job. And before joining the Federal Emergency Management Agency as deputy director in 2001, GOP activist Mike Brown had no significant experience that would have qualified him for the position. I mean, I don't even know if the guy was in the Army. That would probably have helped him a little bit. I mean, you know, kind of planning or something. The Oklahoman, which is Oklahoman, got the job through an old college friend who at the time was heading up FEMA. Hey, you want my job? It's pretty cool. You don't have to do shit. The agency, run by Brown since 2003, is now at the center of a growing fury over the handling of the New Orleans disaster, which was in of itself a disaster. I look at FEMA and I shake my head, said furious Governor Mitt Romney yesterday, calling the response an embarrassment. Well, you know, when you wind up killing lots of people and more people die, it's not embarrassing, it's criminal. President Bush, after touring the Big Easy, said he was not satisfied, end quote, with the emergency response to Hurricane Katrina's devastation. Not satisfied is like how you'd, you know, kind of grade something on a, like a hotel, restaurant, sort of, were you happy with the service, unhappy with the service, or satisfied, not satisfied. I would say that the response was criminal, as in very bad, as in people going to jail and court cases about it. And a U.S. Representative, Stephen Lynch, predicted there would be hearings on Capitol Hill over the mishandled operation. Good luck. Maybe they'll hang Brown because he's not that well connected. Brown, formerly an estates and family lawyer, which means he knows lots about, you know, emergency planning, this week has made several shocking public admissions, including interviews where he suggested FEMA was unaware of the misery and desperation of refugees stranded at the New Orleans Convention Center. How in the hell could you possibly be unaware of that when I don't even watch TV and I'm aware of that? Before joining the Bush administration in 2001, Brown spent 11 years as the Commissioner of Judges and Stewards for the International Arabian Horse Association, a breeders' horse show organization based in Colorado. So, you know, I guess being a horse guy makes you able to handle disaster response or something. I don't know how that works, but whatever. That's, I guess, how our government chooses to appoint people. This is why sometimes appointing people to positions is not the incredibly best thing to do. You know, just sort of a personal guideline note that I've picked up somewhere along the way. In any case, in pharma fascism news, you know you're going to like this. The European Parliament has approved a law intended to boost the production of children's medicines. The new law obliges firms to produce a drug for adults in the EU to test whether it can also be used for children. Because, you know, we're not giving our kids enough drugs. It also gives firms new incentives to produce children's drugs by adding 6 months to the patent protection period. So really, we need more, you know, drugs for kids. At present, most of the drugs prescribed to children have not been tested for pediatric use, forcing doctors to guess the right dose. So that means that if your doctor is giving your kid drugs, that son of a bitch is throwing darts. The law was passed a day after the UK scientists unveiled a study suggesting that 2/3 of children treated in hospitals are given drugs that have not undergone appropriate tests. That's major headline stuff, which we're not hearing about. I would want to know if 2/3 of the children being treated in the UK are being given drugs that are, well, in a word, experimental. At present, drug firms focus on making medicine for adults because the market and financial returns are larger because it's about the money. Testing drugs on children is also more complicated and costly because different age groups require different doses. In regulations on medicine products for pediatric use, the regulation on medicinal products for pediatric use creates a new European pediatric committee to assist companies and plans for testing child medicine and to absolve companies from carrying out the test if the drugs clearly have no application for children, i.e. Viagra. It also, this new law, creates a fund it creates to finance research into the possible adaptation of existing drugs which are not covered by patents for use by children. Good. Sets up a network of researchers and research centers designed to prevent duplication of research tests on children. Yes, because we wouldn't want two tests giving us conflicting data. That would be bad and would cause things like an inquiry. Similar legislation encouraging the production of medicine for children already exists in the United States, but that really doesn't mean anything because, as we all know, the United States has no concern for its people whatsoever. Please see previous story. Now, when I got this thing about the pharma-fascism here, my mind has a tendency to fall back to that wonderful film I watched on the weekend, which really makes you want to stick a gun in your mouth. What's it called there? The Constant Gardener with Ralph Fiennes, the most understated dude in the entire movie. Now, other than the fact that the brother needed to really seriously wog out, I mean, the one thing I really kind of gets me is a lot of these activists and peace activists and stuff like that, they're all like this ultimate uber nonviolent, you know, jobby. You know, and honest to God, you know, you'd think that these guys who are activists and stuff like that would be willing to, you know, fight against core political tyranny. Because if you think you're going to be able to fight against core political tyranny and that kind of jazz, you know, in a bloodless fashion, well, you're kind of full of crap. And when you realize that these pharmacom companies are doing drug testing in Africa for the rest of the world so that, you know, we do experiment on the people in Africa and then, you know, sell the drugs for the rest of the world, everybody makes money except for, of course, the poor Africans who are dying in droves, but nobody really gives a shit because, hey, can you remember a time when Africans weren't dying in droves? No! So, does that mean it's acceptable? Absolutely not. What it means is we have grown complacent to the tragedy that exists within the world. Isn't that nice? Something just to remember. People are still dying en masse on biblical scales in Africa and have been doing so for quite some time. Hence my usual Heart of Darkness speeches. Now, in Desert War news, I didn't hear about this because everybody's talking about, you know, the whole New Orleans sinking thing, Waterworld and all that good stuff. Now, I got this from Pravda, that wonderful Russian paper, which is getting more and more tabloid every day. But that said, the city of Al-Qaim in the northern Iraq is completely under control of Al-Qaeda militants. So the whole city is now under control of Al-Qaeda. Well, I guess we better dust off the bombs. The situation became more acute in Iraq. It was reported on Tuesday that the city of Al-Qaim, I guess I'm saying that right, Al-Qaim? How do they say? A-L-Q-A-I-M. Al-Qaim. Al-Qaim? The city of Al-Qaim in northern Iraq was completely under control of Al-Qaeda militants who declared the formation of the Islamic Republic of Qaim. So everyone, please alter your maps. Now, the city of Al-Qaim is now the Islamic Republic of Qaim. Oh, so it's not Al-Qaim, it's now Qaim. Welcome to Qaim. Population? Militants. In response, the USA and their allies began perhaps the largest military operation since their incursion into Iraq. Did you hear about this? Because I sure as shit didn't. First, Al-Qaim, which is situated in the desert on the border with Syria, was thrilled with the intertribal clashes. That's what it's saying. This was aggravated by the fact that this area, which is settled by the Sunnites and Al-Qaeda militants, felt right at home. This is in the areas militants have been attacking the Americans. Local citizens, tired of the never-ending American bombings, terror acts of Osama bin Laden's supporters, and intertribal struggles, almost abandoned the city, leaving it for the mercy of Al-Qaeda. So there's no innocence there. If there are, there are very, very few. And they've chosen to stay there while they're under Al-Qaeda rule, which means they would be Al-Qaeda supporters, and, you know, because they're now part of the Islamic Republic of Qaim. Last weekend, terrorists under the leader of Iraqi cell of Al-Qaeda, Abu Musab al-Zarqawi, you know, this guy, you know, this al-Zarqawi guy, I mean, he's all over the place, you know, I keep hearing this son of a bitch. They declared it the Islamic Republic, hoisting the flag of their organization which is a sun on a black field. I'd like to get a picture of that, if someone could just send me a picture so that we know that's what that flag is, because that'll be a really funny flag to kind of mark out, like, these guys are making a big mistake by setting up a camp. Or not. Maybe they're just going to get them all there and make that a nice big center, and we nuke it till it glows. Public executions of policemen. Oh, that's good. Local authorities and everyone who's suspected of collaboration with occupation forces began in the city. So we're killing everybody. Militants replaced the existing court with Shariat's law and declared the formation of the Islamic Republic. Welcome to the Islamic Republic of Qaim. The poster at the city entry reads, wow. The majority of the militants are mercenaries from various Muslim countries. Although some of them are Iraqis, they have the whole city under their control. They patrol it and build barricades. Well, I need some armor, please. Can we just get the armor division just walk in there and just fuck that, actually. Just bomb the snot out of it. It is interesting to note that the information about the city's occupation appeared in the media only 2 days after it had begun. All this time, American troops were preparing for the operation. U.S. Air Force planes bombed two bridges at the Euphrates River near the Syrian border. The main goal of the American is to prevent al-Qaeda militants from occupying other cities. The operation is carried out in Karbala and is considered the staging point for militants' intrusion into Iraq. All the efforts are hurled into preventing militants from escaping al-Qaeda. So I guess what they're going to do is they're going to get them all into this Islamic Republic of Qaeda, and then they're going to nuke the shit out of it. This is what I'm, you know, this is what my, you know, somewhat limited intellect has been able to conjure. And do I have a problem with that? You know, do I have a problem with this? Not really, no. Not really, because, you know, they've been running and hiding and ducking and covering and all that good stuff. And if they decided they're going to make themselves a nice little republic in a city, good for them. Night, please stay all together so that we can get you all at once, you fucks. In Shadowrun news, Druid Y. Simmer, how's this for, you know, some really serious... this is just another example of, you know, corporations and the core political. Sent to me by Druid Y. Simmer, I must add. The U.S. Navy asked Halliburton to repair naval facilities damaged by Hurricane Katrina. What are the odds? What are the odds that Halliburton would be involved with this? Wow. I mean, why would they choose them? The Houston Chronicle reported just the other day. The work was assigned to Halliburton's KBR subsidiary under the Navy's $500 million CONCAP contract awarded to KBR in 2001 and renewed in 2004. The repairs will take place in Louisiana and Mississippi. KBR has not been asked to repair the levees destroyed by New Orleans, which became the primary cause of most of the damage. Since 1989, governments worldwide have awarded $3 billion, $3 billion, in contracts to KBR's government infrastructure division to clean up damage caused by natural and man-made disasters. Earlier this year, the Navy awarded $350 million in contracts to KBR and three other companies to repair naval facilities in northwest Florida damaged by Hurricane Ivan, which struck in September of 2004. The ongoing repair work involves aircraft support facilities, medium industrial buildings, marine construction, mechanical and electrical improvements, civil construction, and family housing renovation. In March, the former director of the Federal Emergency Management Agency, FEMA, which is tasked with responding to hurricane disaster, became a lobbyist for KBR. Oh, wow. Joe Albach was director of FEMA during the first 2 years of the Bush administration. It was Joe, who was a college buddy of Mr. Brown, who's currently dropping the ball at FEMA, and I bet he's glad he's not there. Today, FEMA is widely criticized for its slow, uber-fucked-up response of the victims of Hurricane Katrina. Albaugh managed Bush campaign in Texas, governor in 1984, served as Bush's chief of staff, and regularly sucked him off. And this is why he's now in there getting all of the... Of course, Halliburton ties the Bush family just goes on and on and on and on. Nothing new there. Now, just when you thought it was safe to turn your computer back on, it seems that we've got Mudhut Online. Never mind America Online. We've got Mudhut Online. This was sent to me by Desert Runner. A new Trojan monitors access to porn sites and then displays a quote from the Quran chastising the surfer for his or her sins, a security vendor said Tuesday. Since once it's installed, the Yusufalia, called Cager A by Trend Micro, watches which sites Windows users visits and examining the browser's title bar. If the Trojan sees the word in its lid, such as teen, double X, sex, or penis, it minimizes the window and displays a quote for the Quran. Wow. Yusufi, For example, a quote would be, "Know therefore that there is no God but Allah, and ask forgiveness for the fault, and for the men and women who believe, for Allah knows how he moves and how blah, blah, blah." Insert Mudhut bullshit here. This Trojan isn't trying to steal your money or confidential information, but acting as a moral guardian instead. Outstanding. There's something just fantastic about someone or something from the Quran trying to act as my moral guardian. As it seems, the followers of the Quran are doing a lot of damage right now. Not to single them out, the followers of the Bible are also doing a lot of damage right now. So the last thing I need is Mudhuts telling me that I'm dirty. Thanks so much. It goes on to say here, blocking the viewing of the sites is determining our unsavory. Thank you. I'd like Islamic law to censor me. That'd be wonderful. Says Graham Cloley, senior technology consultant at Sophmos. In a statement, quote, "This may have been written as a joke or as a serious attempt to clean up the habits of internet users. This is ridiculous." Eventually, the Quran quote is replaced by a "for exit, click here" button. Once the user moves the mouse, however, the box changes to show three buttons, log off, shut down, and restart, all of which, when clicked, log off the current user. The mouse cannot be moved outside the button's box. That box shows the text, "Oh no, I'm in the cage," hence the moniker Cager by the antivirus vendor Trend Micro. So they couldn't really call it the Quran virus, so they tried to come up with a term that gets to name this thing. It's just ridiculous. You know, it's totally ridiculous the amount of crap that's going on in the battle for the hearts and minds of everyday people. Like, when are we going to wake up? When are we going to realize that they're using religion to control us all over the world and just start moving towards science and the understanding that what we need is an exploration-based society? I don't know. Again, space program. Thank you. I'm comfortable with the fact that we, as humans, are a savage, warlike race. I totally understand that. It cannot be denied. When you look at history, we are, in fact, a savage, warlike race. So why don't we just take our savage, warlike tendencies and, you know, put them towards things like, exploration of space, because eventually we're going to be, you know, coming in contact with something somewhere. So why not just, you know, start working on space marines, do drills for space marines, that kind of a thing, you know? Or maybe I'm just crazy. But one thing's for sure, I definitely think that we shouldn't be killing each other. I think we should be probably working together so that we can, you know, try to look after our resources, maybe practice family planning, you know, that kind of an idea. Now, in water world news, female survivor. Now, this story here, this is another one of those ones that the law enforcement in New Orleans is just pissing me off to a level that I can't really even, you know, explain to you right now. It's so incredibly bad. So bad that I am at a loss to even state just how bad this truly is. I mean, it's absolutely disgusting what's been going on down there. But female survivors, apparently, of Hurricane Katrina in New Orleans were urged by government rescuers to flash their breasts in order to receive help in the immediate aftermath of the storm. Okay, that, according to English tourists who are now just returning to the United Kingdom, relating their horror stories to British media. Now, this is probably an isolated event. I don't think all of them are doing this. Jed Scott, 36, of Liverpool, was on his annual vacation at the New Orleans Ramada Hotel with his wife, Sandra, who's 37, and their 7-year-old son, Ronan, which is, incidentally, Ronan's a really cool name. "I could not describe how bad the authorities were, taking photographs of us as we were standing on the roof, waving for help for their own personal photo albums, little snapshot photographs," Scott told the BBC News. Scott said there was a group of girls standing on the lobby's roof calling out for passing rescuers for help. The authorities said to them, "Well, show us what you've got," doing signs for them to lift up their T-shirts. The girls said no, and the rescuers said, "Well, fine," and motored off down the road in their motorboat. "That's the sort of help we had from the authorities," he said. Now, this is just one guy saying this, and I don't even know if it's true, but something inside of me says, yeah, that's possible. New Orleans is noted for women flashing their breasts in public, especially during the annual Mardi Gras festival. Scott called the relief operation, quote-unquote, horrendous, noting that police officers had taken souvenir photographs of stranded people begging for help. Well, I mean, they are documenting. I don't really see why they'd have a problem with people taking pictures, but whatever. "The only information we got from anybody in authority is if a policeman came past and we shouted to them out the windows. The only information we've ever gotten of them was negative. Don't go here. Don't go there. there was a no, are you okay, are you safe, have you got water, most of the time they would ignore us. Well, that's probably because, I mean, there's a lot of reasons here about the hows and whys and understanding, but the only thing I'm getting from this is the fact that the rescuers were asking chicks to show them their tits. Now, a few people would like to know how I would tend to, you know, deal with police corruption. One of the things that, you know, in my wonderful little world of, you know, taser rides and corporal and capital punishment and all that sort of stuff, is that if, I think that if you're going to be involved in law enforcement, you're taking on a mantle to be employed in the observance of law. Therefore, your penalties, if you break the law, should be more severe, I would say by a factor of two. So, that would mean then if you're guilty of crimes that would normally just get a regular guy, you know, pretty severely messed up, this would, like, there'd be a lot more capital punishment for cops, which sounds brutal, but no, that totally makes sense to me. I mean, if you're going to be a cop, right, and you decide that you're going to be the support and the bastion of, you know, life, liberty, and justice and all that sort of stuff, and you get corrupt, no, dude, no, no, no. You need to make sure there's a huge message sent that says, no, corruption is not tolerated, and you need, like, twice as hard laws against police than you do against regular people, thereby to prevent corruption. You see what I mean? It's a deterrent. That's what it's used for. Now, in Skynet news, this is really kind of hardcore. And I feel bad because, again, you know, Canada is... there's a lot of good soldiers in Canada. The problem is that our government has just chosen not to fund them and to, you know, play little games so that these guys can't possibly get the support they deserve. But anyway, in Skynet news, sent to me by Wyandi, it is usually the stuff of science fiction in Hollywood. I love it when they start an article this way. But Canadian defense researchers are debating, listen to this now, the replacement of the trusty CF-15 jet fighter with a fleet of sophisticated pilotless drones. The concept was first proposed in an internal 2003 Defense Department research paper. It has now become the subject of discussion within the Air Force. The CF-18, which is currently undergoing a $1.3 billion life extension moderation, is scheduled to keep flying until 2017. Pretty good jet. I don't know how it's standing on the world stage, but it's a pretty good jet. The idea of simply substituting one manned aircraft for another is something that should no longer be considered a fait accompli given to increasingly complexity and relatively low cost of unmanned vehicles, said Thierry Gongora, a defense researcher. In his study, one of the options Gongora suggested is replacing the CF-18 with a fleet of pilotless drones. How Skynet is this? It's in the realm of possibility, he said in an interview from Ottawa. There are people thinking that much outside of the box. In an age of tight budgets, a defense policy review by the and U.S. resolve to extend its security perimeter to the whole of North America. I see this here, a defense policy review and a U.S. resolve to extend its security perimeter to the whole of North America. So, again, the eventual invasion of Canada by the United States, which I've been saying forever that is going to happen. It's going to happen within my lifetime. My country is slowly dying. The idea of switching to drones isn't that far-fetched, says General Paul Manson, retired chief of defense staff and member of the Conference of Defense Associations. Not having to risk the lives attacking heavily defended targets makes them very attractive, said Manson. Pilotless surveillance drones, such as the U.S. Predator, have seen military duty in Afghanistan with American and Canadian forces. The growing popularity of the system, which combines real-time video to a host of other electronic surveillance, has led to the development of more sophisticated drones that can carry missiles and attack ground targets. Obviously, we're not concerned about the United States at all, you know, because clearly they could just walk all over us, so we're just going to, you know, suck up to the U.S., which is fine. I mean, that's just reality. You have to come to the grips that this is how the world will work. But I'm not too sure I like the idea of not having human-piloted fighter jets. That's just, well, seems kind of shitty. Now, I have a really unfortunate update here. Well, or fortunate, I should say. Remember that guy who put on the FBI cap, went into the room, and killed those two pedophiles? Well, it seems the man who confessed to slaying two registered sex offenders in Bellingham, Washington, told police he was outraged. This is why he did it, by the recent case of John Edward Duncan III, a convicted sexual predator being held in Idaho. Michael Anthony Mullen, 36, made a brief court appearance Tuesday in Whatcom County Superior Court, about 80 miles north of Whatcom County. He turned himself in. He turned himself in to Bellingham Police Monday afternoon. Mullen, a longtime resident of Whatcom County with a history of petty crimes, faces charges in the August 26 shooting deaths of Hank Ice, 49, and Victor Vasquez, 68. Both victims were level 3 sex offenders, considered the most likely to commit similar crimes again. Mullen's arrest all but ended fears that a vigilante was on the loose targeting the registered sex offenders in Bellingham area. I'm sure there was huge fears. Everyone was terrified that the sex offenders were going to get geeked. It's a relief that he's not running around anymore with who knows what on his mind. Probably more of the same. I see. Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's a relief, said Bellingham Mayor Mark Ampson, who was informed of Mullen's arrest minutes after it happened. Yeah, that'd be terrible if he went around and was just geeking all these pedophiles. Police said Mullen called 911 from a Bellingham restaurant and confessed to the murders. He was arrested and questioned for hours and hours, said Bellingham Police Lieutenant Craig Ambrose. Investigators said Mullen provided details of the crime that only the killer would know, such as the caliber on the weapon and the way in which each victim was shot once in the head. Ambrose said during the interview, Mullen repeatedly came back around to the Idaho incident, referring to the Duncan case. Let's just say he was influenced by what happened there, Ambrose said. Duncan, a 42-year-old convicted sexual predator from Tacoma, Washington, is in Kootenai County, Idaho, awaiting trial in the slayings of 4 people and the kidnapping of 2 children in May near Coeur d'Alene, Idaho. Duncan is being investigated in the deaths of other children across 4 states, including California. Less than 2 weeks after Duncan's case made national headlines, police said Mullen got a Whatcom County website that listed all the names and addresses of all level 3 sex offenders in the county. Eas and Vasquez lived with a third sex offender in Whatcom County there in a little greenhouse on Northwest Avenue. You know, so I guess this guy went to the little greenhouse on Northwest Avenue inside of Whatcom County and killed 2 of the 3 sex offenders that were living there who were all level 3 and are guaranteed to offend again. And I guess he's going to jail for that now because that's illegal currently to do that. You're not allowed to kill sex offenders even though there's a very high likelihood they will sexually assault more children. That's illegal. Can't do that. In Blaine, Canada news from Thunderspud. The Canadian Recording Industry Association is calling on Ottawa to make sure Canada's national copyright laws are up to par after an Australian court ruled the popular file-swapping network Kazaa was illegal. Look at that. Oh, boy. What's going on in Australia has something to do with Canada? I guess it does. You know, because Canada's a haven for terrorism and piracy. Good God, you know, when are the Americans going to invade and take us over so that we could certainly get rid of this terrible, you know, terrorism and piracy we got happening here? Not to mention the fact that if they pass that Islamic law stuff in the courts, well, you know, the law that is currently on the books, that's in force, is so antiquated. Oh, my God, it's antiquated that the net result has been that despite our best efforts, Canada has become a piracy haven, Association President Grant Henderson said in an interview Monday. We have lobbied for years to get those laws up to date so that we're in line with everyone else in the world. And I do mean everyone. The group represents the companies that produce more than 95% of all records sold in Canada. So, you know, he's lying out his ass to get his point. According to a June report from the Organization for Economic Cooperation and Development, Canada has the highest per capita rate of unauthorized file swapping in the world. I see. Well, it has also been reported to have the second highest level of broadband penetration, making it vulnerable to piracy. What the hell does that mean? But in what Henderson and the other industry insiders are calling a wake-up call to internet traffickers, a federal court ruling in Australia told Monday found 6 defendants guilty of copyright infringement and ordered them to pay back 90% of the record industry's costs in the case. The defendants include Kazaa's owner, Sherman Networks Limited, and its Sydney-based chief executive officer, Nikki Hemming, as well as Altnet, a company that provided some of the software for the Kazaa website. Software for Kazaa, which until recently was the largest unauthorized file sharing service, was at a peak of 4.7 million users worldwide, will no longer be available to download. Well, I guess that's the end of that. Time to switch over to BitTorrent. Now, in Busted Fixer news, this is yet another Shadowrun story involving yet more private military work. In a story resembling a Tom Clancy thriller, A British mercenary accused of conspiring to violate the Arms Export Control Act in connection with a scheme in 1991 to illegally export a U.S. fighter jet intended for the use in killing Pablo Escobar, the then leader of Colombia's Medellin drug cartel, was arrested in Texas. According to U.S. government officials, he was on his way to attend a security training classes at Fort Bliss. So come to our training class. Oh, look, you're going to jail. Federal agents arrested reputed British mercenary and counterinsurgency expert David Brian Tompkins, who's 63, after he was intercepted at George Bush International Airport in Houston, Texas. Arriving on a flight from London, Tompkins was met by agents and U.S. customs inspectors after they determined there was an outstanding Homeland Security Department warrant for his arrest in Miami. I guess they have Homeland Security Department warrants now. Tompkins was traveling to the United States to attend survival training at Fort Bliss. Interesting. Why would a 63-year-old man be taking survival training? Texas, in order to obtain appointment as a security official with a firm involved in reconstruction in Iraq. In April 1994, Tompkins had been indicted in the Southern District, Florida, for conspiracy to violate the Arms Export Control Act as a result of the investigation. He had fled the United States prior to the indictment, suspecting that he was under federal investigation. Federal authorities claim the arrest of this individual removes a key player from the ranks of international arms dealers. One of the most important missions of the DHS is to put these individuals out of business to prevent them from tracking in sensitive U.S. weapons. Seems to me like this guy wasn't really a bad guy. This guy sounded more like a good guy. But whatever. The investigation into Tompkins began in 1991 when ICE agents in Puerto Rico received word that Tompkins was attempting to buy a fighter jet for use in killing Pablo Escobar. Now, I'm not even really all that, you know, super elite on the PMC front, but I don't think he would just tell people that's what he was doing with the jet. The then chief of the Medellin drug cartel, this Pablo Escobar guy, ICE agents launched an undercover probe and soon met with Tompkins in Miami to negotiate the sale of an A-37 Dragonfly, a Vietnam-era turbojet fighter aircraft used in counterinsurgency efforts. So he's killing the head of a drug cartel. I guess that's bad. We wouldn't want to kill the heads of drug cartels. What the fuck? Why is this guy going to jail? I mean, he's 63 years old. He's got a history of doing this. He's trying to take out what happened to the war on drugs. Why is this guy getting arrested? Very weird. Very, very weird. Now, in dead mercenary news, something to think about here, four U.S. security contractors have been killed by a roadside bomb in southern Iraq city of Basra. Sorry. The officials said the men worked at the U.S. consulate and were attacked on their way from the airport to central Basra. TV pictures showed an overturned vehicle near a busy road. Three of the victims died instantly, and a fourth died later in hospital. The British military said its forces were securing the area, and an investigation had started. Eyewitnesses said a convoy of four all-terrain vehicles were driving along the road when the attack happened. Now, this is, you know, very common because these vehicles, you know, they view things as obvious as these guys when they hit the ground because, you know, they're the only ones driving around in brand new SUVs. So, of course, the insurgents know exactly who to attack, and it's kind of sad. A roadside bomb blew up the last car, and it flew from one side of the road to the other, one witness said. Note here how much training you had nothing to do with whether or not you got hit by that bomb. Roadside bombings have been relatively rare around the Basra area in recent months. But the two British soldiers died on Monday in a similar attack west of the city, and two British security contractors were killed in late July. Now, my question here about these contractors who are being killed all over the place is who will mourn them? Who will mourn these people? You know what I mean? Now, it could be said, well, Sean, you know, they're professionals. All they are is they're soldiers. They're soldiers just like anybody else. You know? Yet, these guys are getting geeked all over the place. It's kind of sad, you know, that these guys are dying like this. And, you know, I guess, what do you do? What's the answer here? You know, you want to put more U.S. soldiers in there and put their lives in danger, or would you rather go to the contractors? Now, I feel kind of badly because, again, how much training? There's no amount of training that would have saved you from that. And anybody who's, you know, got military experience thinking about going over there, you got to bear in mind you could have had, one of the guys who died over there was a Navy SEAL instructor, best of the best and all that shit. You know what I mean? These are the kind of guys that eat cornflakes out of skulls and stuff. And yet they're dying left, right, and center. Why? Because bombs have no friends. Be aware, minds do not care. They will simply detonate their IEDs and nail you that way. It's a very effective, very messy, very shitty way to wage a war. Now, I'm going to go completely old school on you here with the Daily Hack. Now, this got sent to me a couple days ago, and I thought, eh, that's kind of cool. And then, out of curiosity, morbid, sick, weird curiosity, I printed out one of these particular little units here. I took a look at it. I said, hey, that's pretty hot. And now, I'm a big fan of this thing. This is like the slickest little mod ever. This is called a pocket mod. And thanks so much to Kung Fu Robot Monkey, because this seems to be my new chosen form of crack. The pocket mod, is a new way. Not really, it's just using paper. But anyway, it's a new way to keep yourself organized. Let's face it, PDAs are too expensive and cumbersome, and organization and organizers are bulky and hard to carry around. Nothing beats a folded up piece of paper. And again, walk out, because the shit is cheap. That is until now. The pocket mod, you can carry around the day's notes, keep them organized any way you wish, and easily transfer the notes to your PDA spreadsheet or planner. Now, as a matter of fact, what I do, the way I've configured mine, is so that I've got first page is a calendar, second page is my daily list with a note page next to it, and then you could do like 2 days at a time, so you're not going to get too far out. You start planning like 3 weeks in advance, you know, you got problems. I mean, of course, you got your calendar and your data on your box, but it's good to just keep track of what changes are made during the day. Like, for example, today, I was supposed to get up early, didn't happen to do that, so you wind up having to change all your plans, make sure you can make all of your engagements. The Pocket Mod is a small book with guides on each page. The guides or templates combined with a unique folding style enable a normal piece of paper to become the ultimate note card. It is hard to describe just how incredibly useful the Pocket Mod is, and best of all, they're totally customizable, and you can dive in and totally create one. This is one of the coolest things I've seen online. So simple, yet effective. It's getting my huge walk seal of approval because I myself use this, and it's pretty hot. And, of course, that's all I got for you today. But don't worry. Don't you worry. I will be back tomorrow to make sure you get all the information you need to stay alive. This is a free radio broadcast brought to you by the generous donations of 59 subscribers with 7 new donators for the month of, what would that be? Would that be July? No, that would be August. Ooh, boy, August. Jeez, June, July, August. Because we're now, so it'd be the month of August. I think it's for the month of August. And thank you so much to the 56 people who do donate. You guys rule. Digital baptisms this week are for Ian, is now known as Vino, or capital V-I-N-0. And thanks again to everyone and their assistance in gathering data. If you have access to sensitive information or any other pertinent stories, please email them to newsreel. That's N-E-W-S-R-E-A-L at rantradio.com. If you like the music in the background, be sure to pick up the compilation album, Go Ahead 15. Compilation album. What did I say there? Alba? The compilation album, Go Ahead 15. And I'm going to leave you now with a Goa Psytrance track from, I believe it's called Hallucinogen, from the album Orb, or it's either from the group Orb Hallucinogen album, called LSD. So until tomorrow, that's what server said. End of line.
I believe with the advent of acid, we discovered a new way to think, and it had to do with piecing together new thoughts in your mind. Why is it that people think it's so evil? What is it about it that is scares people so deeply? Even that, and what is it? Because they're afraid that there's more to reality than they have confronted. That there are doors that they're afraid to go in, and they don't want us to go in there either, because if we go in, we might learn something that they don't know. And that makes us a little out of their control. I'm